Okay. I need them all. I'm going, if you don't mind, I'm going to use the mouse myself because I go very fast and I'd be saying next slide too often. So, yeah, my name is Thomas Kulonsnik. I'm an American. Well, I show here Berlin, but I live in Hong Kong as well. And I came here because I nearby in Berlin. But anyway, I would like to talk about this subject, and I'm talking about polymerization of nanocomposites, nanoparticles, and polymers. Okay? Now, nanocomposites comprise NPs, and a polymer are observed to display significant enhanced mechanical properties. You probably all know this. An NP here will be nanoparticle. An enhancement is thought to be a nanoscale interface is created somehow, but there doesn't seem to be any explanation for that. Now, nanocomposite design, if you want to design a nanocomposite, how do you go about this? This is a logistical problem. You cannot proceed without knowing the properties, right? And the tensile tests are not possible. The interface is very close to the nanoparticles, and you can't cut a tensile specimen and test it. So you can't make the tensile specimen. Now, the alternatives, what do? You still have to design this, and this is the dilemma we have. You could use MD to derive the interface properties, and MD here is electrodynamics. But MD, based on Leonard Jones, even ab initio, you can never show that to duplicate the stress-strain curve of the interface if it's unknown. Okay? Or, what you could do, and some people are doing this, use FE with assumed stress-strain curves to simulate experiments on a prototype nanocomposite design. You have a design, you do an FE analysis. An FE here is finite element, for example, ANSYS. But if you do this, there's no need for finite element simulation, right? You just build and test. And all over the world, and I've traveled all around, it seems like everyone in nanotechnology is just building and testing. And the data is good, but the explanations of that are a lot of hand-waving. So the proposal I'd like to make for nanocomposites is you have to select... cross-linking mechanism. I'm going to select that and fabricate representative macroscopic tensile specimens and use tensile tests to determine the stress-strain curves of the macroscopic specimens and then perform MD or finite element, whatever you wish, of the prototype design and compare with the prototype experimental results and you repeat this process until it converges. And if it doesn't, okay, but cross-linking is what I selected is the mechanism, all right? And we know polymers are enhanced by cross-linking. Now, radical polymerization, which is using photo-initiators, you can dismiss that because, quite simply, the enhancements are observed without photo-initiators. And UV cross-linking, we know UV will cross-link polymers, but it requires first not only a UV source, but enhancement occurs if the polymer does not UV cross-link. Okay? If it doesn't UV cross-link, it still can become have higher mechanical properties. EM here is electromagnetic. And only if the electromagnetic radiation reaches EUV levels do all polymers cross-link. I have some references on that, but EUV here is extreme ultraviolet. If you get to this level, let's say you could somehow by building something, of course it does it, then you can cross-link anything, is what I've heard. EUV source. Well, now you need an EUV source. And the source of EUV radiation in nanocomposites, I'm proposing, is the QED, induced electromagnetic radiation from nanoparticles. QED is quantum electrodynamics. And here I show that. I show a gold nanoparticle here in an interphase, which is shown in the green color, very close to the surface. This would be the penetration depth of the EUV radiation, assuming it's created inside the nanoparticle. Now, the important issue here is the heat capacity. And this comes back to the application of statistical mechanics to the nanoscale. The EUV is produced upon the absorption of heat during the thermal processing of the nanoparticles under restrictions on heat capacity imposed by QM. And QM here is quantum mechanics. Now, QM requires the heat capacity of the nanoparticle to vanish. Now, I'm going to show you that right here. What you see, the pointer doesn't seem, do I have to use this? I'll show you two basic forms of physics. Classical physics in white, quantum mechanics in yellow. So you see here is the Planck energy of the atom versus the thermal wavelength lambda and microns. And classical physics is given by this white line going all the way across, constant. Classical physics, the atom always has thermal energy. There's no size effect. The atom way out here in the macro scale out beyond 1,000 microns here to the right has the same KT energy as one at the nanoscale. But quantum mechanics differ. This is the Einstein-Hawk relationship for the quantum mechanical oscillator. And what you see here, if you plot it out at 300 degrees Kelvin, you see that you get this yellow curve. And you can see down to maybe 30, 40 microns, you could argue that classical physics and quantum mechanics give about the same energy of the atom. But below that, if you look here, the quantum mechanic, well, heat capacity basically vanishes. Nanoparticles way over here. And Professor Zipperich mentioned the 3-micron coating in one of his talks. And you can see 3, if I take a thickness of 3 microns and a refractive index of 1.5, 2 times 1.5, 3, 3 times 3 is 9, so you'd be out here around 10, 9 to 10. You can see that the KT energy is reduced at 9 microns, you can see that. But if you're at smaller thicknesses, it's very significant. And I'm basically talking nanoscale. Now, in nanoparticles, the atom heat capacity vanishes by quantum mechanics. That's the message I'd like you to walk away with. Conservation of energy. You have to conserve. Now, if you have no heat capacity, right, how do you conserve that energy? The temperature cannot increase, very important. And how do you conserve it? Well, the proposal I've made is the absorbed energy is conserved by QED inducing electromagnetic radiation in the surface of the nanoparticles. And this can occur by frequency up or down conversion, depending on its size, to the TIR resonance. TIR here is total internal reflection. And nanoparticles are the EUV source of polymerization. This is what I'm proposing. They are producing the radiation, and that is cross-linking the polymer. Now, the TIR confinement, if the refractive index of those nanoparticles is greater than that of the surrounding, the proposed EM radiation is confined by TIR. And nanoparticles have a high surface to volume ratio. You all know this. Well, this is very important because when you add heat to a nanoparticle, it's almost totally in the surface. Very important argument. And the nanoparticle surface then confines the TIR wavelength. The radiation will be fit to that diameter. Okay. Equations are simple. The frequency of that radiation is C, the velocity of light, divided by N, the refractive index of the solid, divided by the wavelength. Lambda here is the circumference, which is pi d, and E is the Planck energy of that radiation, is Planck's constant, H times F. Here I try to illustrate that. Here I have a nanoparticle diameter d. You put the nanoparticle in the melt, it tries to go in, and that radiation has to fit on that surface. And that wavelength is simply pi d. Okay, you take that, extend it to application. This is a plot of a wavelength in nanometers versus nanoparticle diameter in nanometers. And I've done this for silicon and zinc oxide. And basically, what you see here, the QED emission is in the EUV for D less than 10 nanometers. And otherwise, it's in the UV and VIS. So you have to have nanoparticles, as I see it, less than 10 nanometers. Get the strengthening effect. Well, yeah, okay. Now, the EUV radiation, how do you do this? Okay. What I'm proposing here is you prepare a polymer tensile specimen. I pick 1 millimeter of a natural polymer. Determine the wavelength of the EUV emission that you have in your design. Okay. And then you irradiate the specimen with that level of EUV radiation. Okay, the question is, how do you do this? Now, what I've shown here is a vacuum chamber in white, and you're looking down the axis, and the tensile specimen is in the center. So you put heat into this cylinder, outside of the cylinder. That heat wants to go in through the coating. Quantum mechanics says no temperature increase. How do you conserve that? You conserve it by emitting radiation. That radiation has wavelength lambda equal 2 and d, as I illustrated earlier. D is the coating thickness. And then you perform tensile tests and then get the tensile stress strain curve. And the conclusions then for this proposal: QED-induced radiation based on quantum mechanics is proposed to provide both a theoretical and experimental basis to the rational design of polymer nanocomposites. And EUV cross-linking is the mechanism by which all polymers polymerize in nanocomposites. And anyone interested in developing this, we can talk later. Now, extensions. And this is probably more important than nanocomposites. And what I've done here is I've applied this to Moore's Law. And you all probably know Moore's Law. It says that the number of transistors on a chip should double every 2 years. And lithography is required then to shrink that transistor geometry by 30% every 2 years. And now what is going on, they're having trouble with Moore's Law. In sustaining Moore's Law in the future, the EUV light source is the holy grail of chip development. Everyone's trying to do this, but it's very, very difficult. Now, what have I proposed here? In the next generation of chips, the EUV source uses what is called LPP lithography at 13.5 nanometers, and this is what is challenging Moore's Law, and you'll see why shortly. LPP stands for laser-produced plasma. And LPP uses high-power CO2 lasers. What they do is they vaporize solid targets, and the atomic emission that comes off, they can filter out to 13.5 nanometers. Okay? And LPP lithography is both complex and very expensive. Estimates are over $120 million for one of these units. But the proposed QED lithography is very simple and expensive, and I'll show you this. Yeah, okay. EUV wavelength is, again, as I pointed out, two times the refractive index times the thickness, and D here is the coating thickness. So here I compare EUV light source. This is the LPP design. Here you see the CO2 laser vaporizing a target. That radiation comes off in all directions, and what comes back is reflected through the mirror to a focal point, and this goes into the secondary optics and then to the chip. Okay? You see, this is very complicated. What I'm proposing is something very simple. You simply take a small glass spherical lens with and coat the front surface with, for example, zinc oxide. As you see here in yellow, and you heat the back surface. And what this happens is QED will induce the heat supply to the backside of the spherical lens to be converted to EUV. Again, if you take around 3 nanometer zinc oxide coating, you can get it around 12, 13 nanometers. There's some problems in building this. This is not simple itself, but it's much easier than the other way. So, and again, anyone interested, we can talk later. And this is my email address and home page. Take a look at it. That's all I have. Thank you very much. Any questions? No questions?
Which material is this best design? Which materials? Is there any limitation for type of materials you can apply this to?
No, the coating can be anything. It has a refractive index. This is the important thing.
Like the industry, they are stuck to silicon now.
Yes.
On the other hand, there are things like, say, 3-5 gallium arsenide, right? They are not compatible, so they face the question of heterogeneous
integration. Well, there is always.
How does this project on this?
Well, I have proposed, this is not the first time I've proposed this, I proposed this for printed circuits.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Printed circuits, electronics, microelectronics, nanoelectronics. If you put a 2 or 3 nanometer coating of zinc oxide
mm-hmm.
on the surface, you will emit more heat.
Mm-hmm.
When you, without the coating, you're stuck with natural convection, which raises the temperature of the printed circuit, right? So, but by adding this coating, the radiation will come off. It will bypass the natural convection. So you lose a lot of heat. You keep the temperature of the printed circuit remains at ambient. So, and then Professor Zipperks, I mean, I don't know if you were here Monday, but he talked about a 3 micron and for a different purpose. But this idea has been applied to turbine blades. They use thermal boundary coating for turbine blades to reduce the temperature and extend the life of the turbine blade. But those thicknesses are like 30, 40, 50 microns. And then the radiation still comes off, but it's in the far UV, so basically you're back to CO to the natural convection limitation. Okay.
Wait.
I'm having trouble understanding you. Can you repeat once more?
What the estimate is more fit for your purposes. Finite element method.
For nanocomposites, right? Is that what you're reading? Yeah. Okay. This has been proposed using finite elements, but you would make an answered model of your 3D geometry and your tensile. I guess you'll be doing your tensile test if you're interested in mechanical properties. Make a simulation. You can make models with answers, and then assume a stress strain curve and do your analysis and compare that with the experimental data, right? So that's been proposed, but when you sit back and think of that, it's nonsense. You already have the answer. And it's unlikely the answer will even give you something like that. Anyhow, it's very good. Answers are very good, but it's not that good. But remember, the nanoparticles are very small, so your model would be somewhat difficult. I don't know if I answered your question, but we can talk later.
There's
not
much about